Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host as always. And today we're joined by Anya Cheng, award-winning fashion tech entrepreneur and founder of Tailor.ai, the AI-powered clothing subscription reshaping sustainable style. A former product leader at Facebook, eBay, Target, and McDonald's, Anya has driven billions in digital growth and launched game-changing platforms like Facebook Shopping. Recognized as a Girls in Tech 40 Under 40 honoree, TEDx speaker, and Northwestern faculty, she's earned over 20 global awards, including the Webby Award for Best Shopping App. Anya bridges fashion, AI, and business with rare expertise. And I've asked her to join us here today to share her story and insider lessons on innovation, leadership, and creating brands that last. So Anya, thanks so much for joining us. How are you doing?
Hello, hello. Yeah, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. This is Anya from San Francisco. So excited to share about how we use AI to as a stylist to help busy men look good while also saving the environment.
I love that. I love that. Now, before we hop in, I'm just curious. You've done so much. You're quite a powerhouse in the business world. How did you even get going in this? Were your parents entrepreneurs? Are you carrying their torch forward? Are you following in mom and dad's footsteps?
Yeah, no, not at all. Actually, I have no families who has been entrepreneurs before. Up to 2 years ago, I always thought people who are entrepreneurs are rich kids who have rich families. And so never thought I would be a founder until 3 years ago. It all started when I had the, but then after I became a founder, I realized I had been almost, I feel like a founder for my entire life. I just didn't know that. You know, when I was in high school and back in Taiwan, that you were at my time, like 20 years ago, you were not allowed to create any new clubs. I create a school-wise petitions to create a club. I almost got kicked out from the school because of that. When I graduated from Northwestern University with my master's degree in marketing, I realized there's no Taiwanese alumni clubs. So again, I started finding people, and then I create the clubs, and we start hosting events and asking the school to pay more attention to Taiwanese students to increase the enrollment rates and invite presidents to visit Taiwan. And when I was at Meta, I helped you Facebook, Instagram shopping. When I was at eBay, I helped you new business in Latin America, Africa, Asia. Was at McDonald's, helped them to build food delivery business when Uber Eats just started, and helped Target launch their tech office. But I didn't know that means I could be a founder. Years ago, it started always my personal problem. So when I was at Meta, I was a few female leaders in leading technology team. So I felt a little bit imposter syndrome. I want to look great so then people won't find out that I'm freaking out every day. So I start trying some subscription boxes like Stitch Fix, but you have to buy from every single shipment. And I didn't want to own that much stuff. Owning clothes means ironing, laundries, folding and tidying ups. And means getting weight or losing weight is a problem. So I start trying some rental company, newly by Urban Outfitter, which is a 4 years old company. They make 400 million revenue in just 4 years, or Stitch Fix, or like Rent the Runway, or Amore. But all of them, you require you to pick 10,000 garment, 20,000 garment, spend 5 hours, 2 hours, or 30 minutes, however we want you to pick. And there was an aha moment that hit me. I realized most of fashion companies are designed for people who are into fashion. Not some who are not into fashion, don't read GQ, doesn't like to think about fashion at all, but need to look good. Research, who think like me, hate shopping and laundry. Turned out that most of them are busy men who think like me. Single guy, salespeople, recruiter, pastor, professor, who just want to get ready for the day, but not into fashion. And that's why Tailor was born. And I became a founder.
I mean, can you speak to what was the MVP like? What were the early days like? For someone that's maybe in a similar position where they think they found an idea, how have you walked that and validated?
Yeah. So we start with the MVP, the minimum viable product, to validate a hypothesis that men would rent clothes. So we launch a simple Shopify landing page for pay of $10. So one day there's a guy email me and say, "Hey, I'm Michael. Can you please bump me up to your wait list?" And I ignore him. I thought he must be a scam. We were just like a few weeks old company with a landing page with no marketing budget whatsoever. So months after that, it was right before Christmas, a guy called me. Hi, Anya, I'm Michael. I live in San Diego. I'm a real estate agent. I really like the brochure on your website. Can you please bump me on your wait list? I've been waiting for 2 months. You guys must be too popular. No, we had nothing. We're just not ready. So I realized the guy actually added me on LinkedIn. I accepted. He found my phone number and he called me. He's a real customer. So we went to the department store. It was right before Christmas on sale. We bought a whole bunch of stuff and then went to post office, put the clothes inside and ship it to Michael. And he was our first customer. And from there, we served 100 customer and we learned a lot during the process. We realized that we need AI. Otherwise, they want us to pick clothes for them, but we won't have enough time and money to hire a human stylist to scale. We realized we need closing partners, so we need more than one brand, need a lot of brands. And now using the business plan, we start doing fundraise and we raised $2 million. And
Wow.
how do we get our first supplier? Because you need clothes, right? So I went on TechCrunch. I thought that if we are get on news, for sure we will get supplier. So I wait outside for a press room. As soon as a reporter came out, I sent them our business card. I didn't even have a business card. It was just something in the random paper. And so I found the reporter from WWD, which is the trade publication for fashion industry. I thought that was perfect. So I emailed her and one day she responds. She said, Anya, stop emailing. I'm not interested in the story. But a week went by. She emailed me again. Anya, I was like, see, you changed your mind, right? I told you so. No, she said, I'm still not interested in the story. I think it's dumb. But somehow my colleague is interested in this story. I will connect you to him. So I
Oh.
talked to him. He totally gets it. He's an amazing reporter, really understands circular fashion, sustainability, support female founder, and love AI. A month went by, the story never came out. Follow up again and again and again, never came out. So life goes on. We went on startup competitions. We won the West Coast Championship. We were ready to compete in Chicago for the global final. Right before we went, because the competition was hosted by University of Chicago. But at that time, but I also teach at Northwestern University. I'm both schools alumni. So I reached out to Northwestern University Student Magazine. At least school will publish your news, right? Faculty might win University of Chicago competition championship. That sounds like a story. So I reach out to them. Yes, school newspaper is easy to cover. So they cover the story. And somehow the local ABC News picked up this news from the student newspaper and invited us to be on ABC show. So we got on ABC morning shows, talk about it. And I emailed the reporter from WWD, the trade publication, say, hey, we got on ABC News. Can you please use this to convince your boss? And the next day, the news came out. When the news came out, we got our first supplier is a fashion company in Canada. They reach out. They say, we are interested in being your supplier. That's how we got first supplier.
Wow, that's fantastic. I love that. Now, I want to backtrack a little bit because you've obviously have real prowess in what you're doing. And in your career, when you first got started, I mean, obviously, it sounds like you were naturally inclined, like even in Taiwan, you were trying to get organized groups and you were rallying like a community. You were trying to spearhead a community in that. As you worked at all these different companies, what were some of the biggest challenges that you learned? I mean, obviously, a lot of people would love to hear about what it's like working at Facebook or at these other big companies. What were some of the biggest lessons that I feel like you had to learn over your career in the beginning, sort of the middle, and kind of where you are now to really prepare you for this?
Yeah, I think so. One thing I learned a lot in big companies is that you can never convince someone your idea because everybody is very smart there. Yeah, you are Ivy League school, so what? Everybody just said, yeah, you work for Meta, so what? The guy used to work for Google as well, and now ChatGPT, right? So nobody, you cannot convince people because your idea, but you can convince people with your logic. What's logic makes? Simple thing. For example, if you own a fruit stand, you sell banana, strawberry. So one day you say, you know what? We think we should put a watermelon outside of a store because we can reduce the theft. While your intern say, I disagree. Then your intern say, I think we should put watermelon inside, right next to a refrigerator because we sell juice and juice has higher margin. What this means that you have a common goal. The goal is increase revenue, but you have a different strategy. Your strategy is reduce thief while your intern is increase margin. You have different tactics. One put watermelon outside, one put watermelon inside. And of course, then you have different risk of that. So like in big company, many times when you have a conflict, you have to really peer the onion out. It's like, what are we disagrees on? What do we agree on? So then you can really solve the problem. And that's something that we still learning and using every day here in startup, because in startup you have very few resources. So you have to think through things before you can do something. Yes, so at the same time, you can do very fast and try and learn and iterate it from there, like how we win on ChatGPT search. Today, if you search 2025 fashion trend, the answer came from Taylor versus GQ. We just won American Marketing Association Award because we got 10 million impressions just by doing so well on ChatGPT, which we use AI with human insight and make it happen, which is a quick iteration. But many other times, you also have to really have a clear thinking on what problem are you solving? How will you believe that you can solve that? And that's what I learned a lot from big companies.
I love that. Okay, so you said that you can't convince them your idea, but you can use logic. So you said you have to peel away the onion a lot of different layers. And then how would you resolve that in that scenario? Your intern wants to put it outside. You're saying we should put it inside. Is it that you just make a very solid, airtight, logical? Because I love that, because I feel I'm a very logical person. So, okay. So I just have to reason with them logically. That always win at the end of the day. I mean, not that there's a one trick pony, but just to kind of dig on that a little bit deeper. You have to peel away the onions. And I guess you're talking about learning how to work with other people, right? How to collaborate even through difficult situations.
Yeah, I think so. It's a learn. For example, if you are more of the world that is more on the data driven, then you might actually come out and say, okay, let's calculate a number then. So for example, like, okay, how many thieves that we have last time from putting strawberry side? Okay, we lost 5% of revenue. Okay, if I put out the juice, how much more we can sell? Like, we think we can sell 5% more juice, then which one makes us more money, right? So if you're a data-driven company, you can use that. Or if you're not, then at least you guys agree on, okay, I think this is right thing to do or not, because we really see that situation happen, or you align with the company mission. For example, Meta and Google, both of them do shopping, Facebook shopping, Google shopping. But because Google's mission is organizing the world's information, while Meta's mission is bring the world closer together. So if you look at Google shopping, it's all price comparison, organizing the world's information. While Instagram shopping, Facebook shopping, where you see mom in the same group and recommend you to buy something because their mission is bring the world closer together. So totally different missions than with the same product, they do it very differently. So with that, then you can either kind of see which one align with more strategy or which one calculating wise, the data make more sense.
Yeah, I love that. So it sounds like being good at what you do isn't everything. You got to be good at what you do, and you have to learn how to work and collaborate with other people. And that's a really big, important part of this. And I, you know, at the end of the day, I think Elon Musk said this, because all a company is a group of people that help another group of people, and they help that group of people via a product or service. And for you now, it's all about Taylor AI, right? It's about helping men look good without having to wake up and figure out, what do I need to wear today, essentially.
Yeah, we help people to increase people also ask us what you learned through their journey. And what we found is we are not really just helping people look good. We help people achieve their goals. So our customers, they don't care what they wear, red or blue. They care more for, this is the one getting a job. This is one getting a date. This is one close a deal. For them, they are buying a chance to succeed, more chance to succeed. They are buying a peace of mind. They are buying almost like the guy behind the superhero. They are buying their like best friend in those movies. Your best friend will help you to fix a tie and tap on your back that you are ready to go. So we realize people are buying the chance to have a better life. And we also discovered that our customers are buying the convenience. So this is why AI play important role, because then we help them to style instead of in the old time, like celebrity have human stylists will take them whole day, bring you to a department store and style you, and you have to pay a few thousand dollars to buy those clothes.
So now, having gone from the startup world through to big corporate agencies, and big businesses, what do you feel are some of the most important skills and behaviors? I mean, we talked a little bit about it. Obviously, you got to be good at what you do and good at working with other people. Are there any specific skills or behaviors that you feel are mission critical?
I think so. I won't say that's mission critical, but I would say many women or minority experience that, right? We all found that you, for example, in big companies, that women will have less chance to be on a leader in tech teams, and or even in a startup space, women founder get 1.8% of VC money versus today, 35% of companies in Silicon Valley are founded by women, 50% in the US are founded by women. So I think we all face that. And no matter if you are a woman or you are in a certain kind of minority, you might have a situation like that. So I think there are a few tips that could help people. For example, in big company, we found that in the old hand, if the first people who ask question is woman, the rest of the question will be asked evenly between woman and man. If the first question is asked by man, the rest of the question 90% asked by man. So in old hand, for example, we save the first spots, always start with a woman to ask the first questions. Or for example, we found that the woman doesn't like to proactively participate in hackathon. So then we were hosting an all-hand where everybody's there. And then right after an all-hand will be the information session of a hackathon so that naturally women can easily just stay versus proactively sign up for the information session. Or we found that in corporate, like women tend to get assigned for busy work. Why don't you onboard this new person? Why don't you prepare the person to order lunch for the team for the offsite? So then we encourage women to say, okay, you can do that work, but why don't you proactively build a list? So then you can assign people, say, how about I do a rotation sheet? Everyone next week will be Brian, next following week will be James. Like I help people, but I put a rotation sheet. So I assign people to do the work versus all the women doing the work. And then in startup world, I got pretty sad at the beginning because I went to TechCrunch and then I saw the global competition, the finalists. And the finalist was a woman who has sold her company twice. So successful, a white woman. And I saw her looks really stunning. And I say, wow, nice, looks really good. And I also love that you have amazing jewelry. She has a giant diamond on her finger. And she said, you know what? I'm not married. I wear this because research shows women who are married are more trusted by investors. So I have to fake that I'm married. I was in shock. I feel so sad. Like how come even a person who have serial entrepreneur and you have to do so, but I start changing my mindset because it doesn't help if just you feel sad for yourself. So I start changing mindset like, hey, if only minority investor will pay attention to minority founder, that's fine. I will find investors who are immigrants, who are women, who are minorities, LGBTs, and I will find people who are Nigerians and Koreans and what. If I rally all of the minority, I have majorities. Right, so that's how we were able to close the last round. We got now investor behind 20 unicorns, Spotify, Facebook, Hello Kitty, NVIDIA's investors. Wow. Top VCs are all our investors.
Wow, that's really smart. I mean, so at one end, you can say it's unfair. There's also an element to it that is just familiarity. I remember I worked with a nonprofit, Invisible Children. And when I was living in Japan, I contacted their headquarters in San Diego and basically made a deal. I helped translate this documentary about child soldiers in northern Uganda. And I helped add Japanese subtitles to the film. And I worked with Kirill Konen at UNHCR and we did the Refugee Film Festival. And my film was, their film was one on it, but I got to tour around because I was sort of the speaker. And 8 years later, they did a version of their film that didn't feature any of the Black kids. It was one of the founders of the nonprofit's white son. And he was explaining and having his son sort of explain, and his son was drawing cartoons about, or drawings about what was happening in there. And because it was kind of his son's understanding of it and sort of a story about his son and how his son has seen this happen, it just blew up. That was Kony 2012, where like Joseph Kony, like this whole worldwide internet phenomenon that came. And I felt like at the time, it's because the majority of the internet users were white. And so you see that, and it's almost hard to relate because that's not what you see in the mirror every day. So in one way, it's kind of unfair. And it's also knowing target marketing and trying to work with the system. If that's the way that it works, it's not to be good or bad or evil or not. It's just to understand people need to resonate personally with, I guess, the story. So for you, it was almost a, I don't want to say a secret key, but it was an unlock that allowed you to get funding. And it maybe allowed you to go kind of to a blue ocean strategy. You started focusing and, you know, you really stood out. Like, you, instead of trying to be the fish in the biggest pond of all the funding, you went and found a niche, and you very well in that niche. And that gives you a place of strength to build from.
Just like our business, right? Only 42% are men, 68% are women. Yeah, but then 68% women in a rental space, 10 companies doing that already. And for men, it's only us, those, and it's still 42%. What are going to men who are not into fashion?
Yeah.
We always think about GQ, but then you know a lot more men not into fashion than men who are into fashion. Sky recruiter, professor, people who don't read GQ but need to look good, right? So instead of just like using analogy of a cleaning supply, I'm not selling cleaning supply. I'm selling the maid service. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to do it, but you want your house clean. No problem, we fix it. The same thing you want to, but you don't want to chase after fashion or figure out what fashion means, what's the latest trend. No problem, we will take care of that. And I truly believe that's actually a bigger market.
I love that. Yeah, I mean, they say there's riches and niches, bitches. I mean, that's a really important thing to remember. And in his famous work, Adam Smith, Wealth of Nations, he talked about the specialization of work. And I actually just read a report recently about AI. And how right now all the companies are focused on these big general AI tools, but actually the future is going to be specialized use cases, specialized models for specialized tools. And that's sort of the case that they were saying in the Wealth of Nations he talks about. I think the example is making pins, that if you have like one person making pins, like sewing pins, they can maybe make 10 to 40 in a day, right? These little metal pins. But if you have a team of four people and everyone has a specialized role, they'll produce 10,000 in the same period of time because everybody hyper-focuses on what they do and they do it better. So I think it's a really insightful thing that there's lots of room in the new future for specialized tools. You know, it's not going to necessarily be one giant overlord AI that rules it all. We need specialized use cases that are customized for people, for their specific problem. You know, and the path to $1 million in revenue is selling a specific solution to a specific problem for a specific type of person consistently. And I think that you're doing that really, really well.
Yeah, what's the real problems to solve, right? I remember we have a friends and they started with helping people to exercise more, but then quickly to discover most of their clients are actually people who are a lot older and have a little bit disability, because for them it's actually even more important. So is your business to be vitamins or painkillers? And in our model, yeah, people, our customer doesn't care looking good, but they definitely care getting a job, close a deal, getting a girlfriend or boyfriend. So then these, we partner with dating site, for example, like Coffee Meets Bagel. We partner with fitness center, with school career center. We work with sales organizations to employee gift and perks. So now that these are opportunity that you are not selling fashion, but you are selling something to help them to doing better job for the everyday. And we found that these end up to be bigger opportunities.
Yeah, that's powerful. For people that are listening that maybe are interested in walking a similar path, how do you approach fundraising? Like, having gone through that process, is there any recommendations that you have for someone that might be listening? Like, you already talked a bit about going for like people more likely to resonate with your story as funders to raise money. What do you see are the biggest mistakes people making when they show up? I know we've all probably seen Dragon Den episodes and Shark Tank episodes where there was a terrible presentation. I mean, what are your critical insights on that? What matters most?
So when 2 years ago, we first raised the fund for the company after we done this 100 people testings. So we start with our own communities. We luckily went through grade school, University of Chicago. I teach at Northwestern University, and I'm also alumni. So we start with people who have similar backgrounds. And then from there, one day we reach out to, and then professor became our investor. So we reach out to the professor and ask professor to connect us to some investor. Professor say, no, I don't know a lot of people, but I can connect you to another student of mine who is also a founder. So I talked to the founder. In the conversation, I was supposed to ask him to introduce us to his investor, but I forgot. I was just genuinely curious about his business and trying to help him. He actually run a company using AI for camera. He sell to police stations. I connect him with my bodyguard when I was working for Meta, when we were bringing internet to countries that didn't have internet. So I went to Africa a lot. So I introduced my bodyguard company to him. I introduced a whole bunch of other companies to him and armies to him. And then a month after, he reached out back. He said, "Hey, Alana, thank you so much for those amazing leads. How can I help you? Or what was the reason you reached out at the beginning?" "I forgot. I was trying to ask you to introduce your client investor to us." So he connected us to Ben Lin. Ben Lin is one of the founding members of Google and Facebook. So he run amazing ventures at Ben Lin Capital. They actually did our investor behind Lyft, Instacart, and another 20 unicorn. We had half an hour conversation with him. And right after half an hour, he write a check for $1 million.
Wow.
So that's how we were able to close our first rounds. In the startup world, you never know who is going to help you. And idea, like we had an intern. So our intern really loved the company doing his time interning with us. He connected us with his classmates. And his classmates, the college student, became our investor. So you never know who's going to be our investor. One day, one of our investors, she used to work for Google. But then after layoff from Google, she couldn't find a job for 9 months. I know it sounds weird, but in fact, it happened a lot in Silicon Valley nowadays because they have these higher up jobs and everybody's laying off people. They don't want to really do really busy work. So then they couldn't find jobs. So for 9 months, she couldn't find a job. She was depressed. So she said, "Hey, can I volunteer as an intern in your company since I have nothing to do?" And then during her time, she really built up her confidence back. She feel like I'm useful, I have value, I have team. Instead of working at home, doing nothing every day, I start doing something and meeting people for social. She totally changed her mindset and the whole like positive feelings. She got the job within a month. She really feel grateful. As soon as she got the job in Samsung, she invests in our company. So many times you don't know who is the investor. You might find this person, like in my career, I helped some company that close so much deals, they end up selling a company to Google. I reached out back to the founder. They didn't even give me a half an hour meeting. So you don't know. You think someone's supposed to help you, they don't. You think someone who may not be helpful, they are. So just open-minded, really build a good business and help people as much as you can and speak out loud when you need help.
I love that. I love it. Just build a good business and help as many people as you can. I think that's just such a good ethos. Even if you are secretly an evil person, even if you don't have an ethical bone in your body, even if secretly, the only way if you're trying to build something long-term is to treat everybody with love. Treat yourself with love, your clients with love, your customers with love, your suppliers with love, your staff with love. It's the only way to get through it. Even if like you get pulled over by a cop, as an example, there's two ways to handle it. You can love on the cop and be a really loving person, or you can be a complete dick. And I mean, it's totally up to you, right? And that energy you put out there. So I just love how you said that. Just try to build a good business and, you know, and help people. I think that's just, you know, in some ways it's not so complicated, but it is the details. I mean, it's especially really scary in there, especially when it's competition. You know, if you're running a local dry cleaning company and things aren't going well, you can't really pick up the phone to call your competitors and be like, "Hey, what are you guys doing to make some sales this week?" Because they're not going to help you. So it can feel really lonely and your staff, they're not going to understand where you're coming from, maybe even your spouse in some instances. That's just really good though.
But you never know. Sometimes your competitor can be your best friends. You know, during the process, we went on startup competitions. Mm-hmm. So we hosting by Draper, the team owned by Tim Draper. Tim is early investor of Tesla. So early investor of Elon Musk and then also PayPal, etc. So he's a legend in the space. So we went on his competition. So in part of a competition, they had some exercise. Some of the exercise was that you have to listen to previous person's pitch, and then you have to presenting for them. As an exercise, they try to help people understand how horrible their pitch was because the next person couldn't understand at all. So, but because when I joined the team, a lot of the competitions person who are also like just starting a company, but we have been doing pretty good job on getting our pitch ready.
Yeah.
So when it was my turn, the previous person decided to sabotage us. The person just create a slide with nothing, just white, nothing. You're supposed to have amazing thing on your slide and next person is supposed to say about it. And the person just put a white slide with nothing. And it was my turn and my score. So I thought of idea. You probably have a time that you really just blind when you have no idea and you don't know what to do in your career, what to do in your life, etc. And then I started a business plan and I did well. And then life on, I went to the final startup competition. I compete my idea for Taylor. And the second place winner, he decided to invest us. And I asked him why. He said he was very impressed when I was sabotaged by another competitor. And then he was very impressed and that we won fair and square. So he became our first investor. So you never know where is the investor. It could be just your colleague from your competition, or we reach out to rent the runway people. And a few of the executives actually promised to be our investor themselves. And then they actually help us to share insight. Even though they are like women's rental company, we are men's rental company, seems very similar, but they feel like if you are successful, we are successful. The whole
You're successful, right?
Yeah.
Right.
So they connect us to all their like shipping companies, vendor. They have 300,000 customers. So they obviously rate a lot better. So we got discounted rate because of them. So you never know. Maybe your competitor can be your best friend and allies.
I love that. You don't want to be building a business on the dead end road. Some people are afraid of competition, but I always say you want to be at a busy food court and just try to be the best version that's got a special flair. You know what I mean? That's for that special niche, that special crowd in the audience. And I think that's a really powerful way to put it. Do you feel anything ever held you back in your career, whether it was a mindset or a skill that you had to learn?
I think so. Many times we, like many of you, you're probably overachiever. Every day you have this long to-do list that you want to do this and that. You want to be a better person. You want to listen to more podcast shows and do more stuff. So have you experienced that the more that you write down your to-do list, the less likely you are going to do your to-do list?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Because you just get longer and longer and longer. You feel like never ending. Every time you open it, you feel like you are swallowed by the list. You just demoralize it. One thing that people told me was that I used to say, I should do this. I should do that. I should lose weight. I start eating fried chickens. No, now we change the mindset. We say, I would like to. I would like to listen to more of the podcast show. I would like to do. So from a blending yourself, like you are a bad person, to motivating yourself that, yes, I want to do that. So I think little tricks hopefully might help you.
That's a good tip. Yeah, how you approach something makes all the difference. I love that. It's very stoic. Marcus Aurelius talks about that in his book Meditations, that you know, you can have a wound on your arm. It can be gangrene and pussing, but if you choose to not feel that it's a like a bad thing, it won't be. You know, it's if you remove the complaint, the offense is gone type thing. It's how you choose to react to it. So that's actually really interesting. Where do you think the future of things are going? I mean, with AI, how it's advancing, obviously you're working, your company is heavily invested in using AI. Where do you see things in 3-5 years?
Yes, for sure. I think next 20 years are still AI, but the era of AI is very different from last generation. Last generation, if you look at the successful company, they all have algorithm. Google, black box, whatever you type in, whatever you come out, everybody fighting for the SEO, right? But the era of AI, unless you want to compete with Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg and also ChatGPT, you are not going to build large language model, those foundation models. You are going to do AI application most likely. That means you have to bring your own unique data so then you can layer on top of their large language model. So then as they grow, then you also grow, but you are always one step ahead. For example, in our model, we know customers' true preference because like your Netflix show, you watch a show, it's not because it's on discount, which is very different from you go to Macy's and department store. Okay, this one's on discount. Okay, I will buy it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we know the true feedback and know the true preference of a customer. We work with 300 fashion brands, and a lot of them are designing 2 years down the road, the future trend.
Mm-hmm.
AI, they know the past, not the future. We
right.
acquired company, they have done 10 years of styling. So they have this unique data for styling. Or we, for example, we have a human stylist, they have professional know-how. So we combine all of those data into a unique module and put it on top of a large language model. So in your business, next 5, 10 years, think about what unique data you have. Maybe you are a manufacturer, but you know the best of how to quality control for a certain defect. Maybe you are a dentist. So you have a lot more of the image of what the issues tease looks like, right? So maybe you are a podcaster and you actually know what kind of podcast people actually enjoy most because your unique data no one else has. So these know-how now become in this era of AI.
I think that's very, very powerful. And again, it comes down to specialization, 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 and trying to figure out what problem or, you know, what community. I think it's either audience first or problem first, but either way, the two are kind of in tandem. You might start with a problem first and then try to figure out which audience. Because if you talked about your friend looking for work, I mean, homeless people need work too. That's a problem, but there's different demographics and psychographics of people that are experiencing that problem. Or you can start out with a community and then try to diagnose what problems they're having and match the problem to a solution. It doesn't even have to be your solution. You could just be a referral, like a trusted referral partner, essentially, right? This is someone that maybe if they install pools, you're only selling a pool to one household kind of once in their lifetime. No one's really installing 2, 3, 4 pools. But after you get the pool in and once you're in the door, you could do an analysis and talk to the owner. Maybe they need a patio. Maybe they need maintenance work. Maybe they need a new roof. There's all sorts of ways that you can use that. Who just got a new pool? Maybe they need a new fence. Maybe they need swimming lessons. Maybe they need, depending on if they have kids or not, maybe they need daycare. So all of a sudden you can use that data to make, like you talked about, make strategic partnerships with other people. That's kind of, I like that. I like that a lot.
You know, with others, right? So people might heard of like BNI, the organizations, which their mindset was like, hey, if I am a real estate agent, so I know people who are moving. So I partnered with a moving company and team up with home staging companies and with furniture companies, with cleaning companies. We all do very different things, but we are targeting the same customer. So instead of we all running our own lead generation campaign, why not we team up? So every time I got a client, I will connect you to this 10 different supplier, the same thing for vice versa. So then we 10 times our customers. So team up and collaboration, working with others versus fighting for yourself.
I love that. Yes, success is very much a team sport, 100%, 100%. I love that. That's very, very powerful. So what are some of the biggest mistakes that you see other startups making? I mean, having done these startup competitions, having talked to investors, having worked at big companies, having probably had friends that you know that started their business, what are some of the biggest pitfalls and mistakes that you think startups make?
Yeah, I will start my own mistakes. We went on startup competitions. So the one that I mentioned that we won the West Coast Championship, but we actually lost in the global final. How? So before I went on the competitions, I found 42 formal judges to practice. That's the best way to practice formal judges. So when I went on the competition, my talk was perfect. But after my pitch, the judge asked me a question. I was stunned. I couldn't answer the question at all. How? Because all in my head, I was thinking, oh, well, these questions, practice judge 37 asked me, and I put his answer in the appendix number 2, and the answer was that I didn't believe that I could answer the question. I didn't believe I could be a founder. But you know what? When I became founder 3 years ago, I had 15 years of career in Meta, eBay, Target, McDonald's. But I didn't believe that I could be a founder. In my head, I was thinking, someone told me the answer is where. It's almost like a student who went on open book exam and he or she spent all of the time on trying to find the answer and lost the time track and then down, 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 down. End up that didn't write down anything. But then when they went home and sit down and look at the question, they totally know the answer. You probably all have that situation. You didn't believe you can. So you constantly have this insecure and not confident and trying to rely on someone. Like, how am I doing? How am I doing? No, you're doing great. You don't need any verifications again. But you didn't believe so. I think that was a big mindset change for me after the competition. I realized that if I don't believe in myself, I'm never going to win. If I don't believe inside myself, my employee, my partner, my investor, no one is going to believe in you because even yourself doesn't believe in yourself. So after that, we start changing the mindset and do a lot better. And that's how we were able to win 11 AI award after this. And then we just won American Marketing Association's Marketing Award as well.
Wow. Wow. I love that. I feel like there's two lessons in there. Obviously, the first one and the most important one is to believe in yourself. We're all going to die eventually. So you shouldn't spend too much time hesitating and wobbling, because at the end of the day, 5,000 years from now, so really you need to have a deep why in terms of why you're doing this, why you're doing what you're doing, why you're pursuing it, something that you're proud of, something that moves you so you can believe yourself, because you're going to have doubts, you're going to have challenges. And the other thing that you said, which I loved, was that you talked to 42 former judges to prep. When I lived in Japan for 3 years and I was studying Japanese and we were going to pass one of the Japanese language proficiency tests. And so my Japanese teacher had me do exam after exam after exam from past years. And she was basically like, what score do you want? And I was like, I don't know, I want to pass with over 80. So we kept doing exams and finding what I sucked at and training for that until, guess what I passed with? Like an 86. So that's, I love that, because that's just such a hack. It's such a cheat code, but it's there and it's for everybody to go out there and do that. I think that's super powerful. But at the end of the day, if you don't believe in yourself, all the preparation in the world can fall apart. If you're running a marathon or an Ironman, your body's never going to carry you across the finish line. If your mind gives up, your body's never going to be like, we can do it. Your mind push your body across the finish line. And so that is one of the most important tools that we have in our toolbox. I think that's fantastic. I mean, this has been a great interview. You've got such great stories and great insights, and you're great at articulating yourself and sharing. First off, if people want to learn more, if they want to check out your tool and try it out, where do they go?
Yeah, go on taylor.style. It's taelor.style, taylor.style. Use a code podcast25 to get 25% off first month. Ooh. So less than $100, you can look great every month. No shopping, no laundry, and also support the environment. So instead of burning Los Angeles inventory, generating 10% of carbon emission in the world, you can contribute a more sustainable world.
I love that. So go check out taylor.style, taelor.style. That is taelor.style. Use podcast25 as your promo code and save yourself 25%. Anya, is there anything I haven't asked you that I should have asked you?
No, I think so. Just if you are also, so we are always looking for great suppliers since you live in Asia. So if you have listeners who are in Asia or Europe, different part of the world, if you have amazing high quality brands, or if you are someone who want to invest in AI and believe in the future of AI application, believe in circular fashion and sustainability, feel free to reach out to me. My email is anya@taelor.ai, taelor.ai. So we will always love high quality menswear brands, investor and partners.
Love that. Yeah. So send her an email, anya@taelor.ai. Anya, thank you so much. It's been an honor and a pleasure knowing you've got your own followers, your own direct reports, your own communities to be speaking with. Thank you for coming and sharing with my audience and I, so we can all do a little bit better.
Thank you so much. Being your best.